But I want to move on to this case. And Melody, this is a young woman, 52 years old, grandma, who presented in 2015. And I think really typifies what a lot of patients with metastatic colon cancer, most of them don't have MSI, so you don't see this kind of great story, don't necessarily have a BRAF mutation so they can respond to targeted therapy. This lady seems like she kind of went through a more typical course. Melanie, can you talk about, I guess she started out in 2015, what was going on at that point?
Sure, and I'll be brief. I know we're cutting on time, but this is a longtime patient of Dr. Messersmith. She was diagnosed in January of 2015. Metastatic, had a lot of disease burden, ovarian mets, pelvic mets, and then a huge mass in addition to liver mets. So she did go through sort of the traditional course of therapy. It started out with CAPOX, and then bevacizumab was added in, and went through numerous cycles of that, went to CAPOX, and then ended up on the FOLFIRI panitumumab. And she was on that, I believe, for almost 2 years. So she did really well with this therapy, given the length of time that she was on it. You can see the electrolyte insufficiencies that we noted, because in our clinic, we started to sort of see this trend with panitumumab, especially long-term, that she would basically have to receive potassium magnesium infusions with every chemotherapy treatment. Struggled a lot with the typical side effects of FOLFIRI and panitumumab, rash certainly, fatigue, diarrhea at times. But overall, in the 2 years she received this therapy, really tolerated it well. She subsequently had to have a pretty invasive surgery because she started to have a bleed, and that was resected, but she had a pretty big surgery, in 2019, and was then resected and then put on TAS-102 after that.
So can you talk a little bit about what happened when she went on the TAS-102 and how she did?
So she went on it initially. They started her around 60 milligrams was her dose. And she, just being primarily a very active woman, I mean, she's young, she does have a huge family, not working, but really struggled and has struggled with fatigue as her primary complaint, not wanting to do a lot, staying at home, not getting out. You know, I would encourage walks with her, kind of just for her mental and emotional state, which I think was also contributing to some of the fatigue. I mean, this woman has been through years of therapy, and really this is going to be what she deals with for the rest of her life. So fatigue being the primary one, she did have neutropenia with TAS-102, and there was dose reductions and then a schedule modification that Dr. Messersmith did, and then the typical diarrhea as well.
So maybe, Wells, you can reflect a little bit upon this patient's course, and I guess also why you used an EGFR antibody. She actually seemed like she did really well on it. What led to that decision based on the sidedness and her tumor biomarkers? And maybe comment a little bit about what happened when she got TAS-102.
Sure. So one of the key things I'm looking for when I'm trying to decide whether to use an EGFR inhibitor, because as Melanie and other people have talked about, you know, they do have their side effects. You can get rash, electrolyte abnormalities, et cetera. So the issue for her was that she was very symptomatic. She had these abdominal lesions. She had pain. And so for her, shrinking the tumor actually had a major quality of life impact. And there are other patients where they don't have any symptoms whatsoever. And shrinking a tumor might make the scan look pretty, but you know, it's not necessarily going to change how they feel. And so in that case, I might wait a little while to use an EGFR inhibitor because a response isn't really going to buy me much. Her case, though, really bad abdominal pain. And the abdominal pain pretty much resolved once we got this thing shrunken down. And then she's pretty much my world record on FOLFIRI and panitumumab. I don't know that I've ever had someone on it that long. When we have someone on for these long term, we certainly encourage them to take an extra week off here and there. And I always tell people, you can take a week off on your terms when you're visiting family, or you can just wait until you're neutropenic or something where we can't give it to you. So we encourage people to sort of have those extra week offs planned and to do something fun, you know, while they're feeling good and feeling up to it. And then with Tess, what was interesting with her was she just felt like she got hit by a ton of bricks on day 5. And so what I did, instead of doing the package insert 5 mg/m² dose reduction per dose, what Melanie and I decided to do, and by the way, Melanie's the one doing much of the work here. I'm sort of focusing on new patients and scan reviews, and folks like Melanie and Tammy are handling a lot of these side effects. But what we decided to do was drop the day 5 and the day 12, which ends up being about a 20% dose reduction, but you're changing the schedule. It's not in the package insert, I should note, but it really helped her for whatever reason. It seemed to just smooth out that crushing fatigue that some people get shortly after day five, day six, day seven. And so for her, she did very well. And actually, I just saw her last week and she's still on test 102 with that altered schedule and is doing fine. Just saw her kids.
Any comments about, you know, the two drugs in this sort of space, so to speak, that are considered are regorafenib and TAS-102? When we survey people, we hear that in general, TAS-102, yes, it has a paper toxicity of neutropenia, but is relatively well tolerated. Regorafenib, depending upon the dose, can be a problem. How do you decide, Wells, which one to go with first?
Yeah, that's difficult. Some of our clinical trials, so a lot of times, especially with a lot of interesting immune therapy trials coming down the pike for colorectal, I'm looking ahead and trying to figure out, okay, how many lines of therapy do I need? Do they want us to have used one of these drugs beforehand? And is the immunotherapy going to include a TKI? Because there's some very interesting data on some of these TKIs combined with immune therapy. And so if I'm thinking about that as a trial, I'm certainly going to go to TAS-102 in that case first. What I often will do for folks is actually, and I just saw someone earlier today, it's why I'm wearing scrubs, because I don't wear a shirt and a tie anymore. We consider ties to be germ sticks at this point. So we're really just have altered our, you know, what we're wearing. And thank God these have large waist strings, because this is from 1998. You know, I just saw someone earlier today, and to be honest, sometimes I'll do both. I do think we can't underestimate the financial toxicity of pills for some people, because if their deductible just reset, they might have a $2,000 bill waiting for them when they go to the pharmacy, or often these drugs are sent. So I'll often write a TAS-102 prescription to say, okay, that's, you know, maybe plan B, and plan A, we're going to look for some trials and kind of start to work on both things at the same time and figure out what the financial implications and other things. And the nice thing is when you use a conventional agent, you don't have a washout period. You don't have to do screening. You don't have to do this, that, the other thing. You can start it, you know, tomorrow if you need to. And on the other hand, with a study, it might be worth waiting next a week or two just to see if you can do the study. So sometimes we're kind of doing both things. Regorafenib versus TAS-102, boy, that's tough. You know, certainly if you treat full dose regorafenib right from the get-go, you're going to blow a lot of patients out of the water and they're not going to want to retry it because of the toxicities. If you work your way up, and I know you have a slide on the redose trial, they tend to seem to do a little bit better. So that's an impact as well.
And I highly recommend that you check out those slides on the redose, though, that we just flipped through, because there's tons of great stuff in the slide set. But let's finish out talking a little bit about metastatic gastric cancer. Again, a little bit of a tasting menu. And actually, Phil has a pretty cool case that he's going to present of a new approach.